listening to The Issues of Life with marriage, family, and child counselor John Jala. Stay with us for the next hour as we explore what's behind the situations and relationships that make up the issues of your life. Now, here's John.
Hello, everyone. This is John Jolliffe, and welcome to the next issue of life. You know what today is, right? You know what it is that people all around the world, well, I shouldn't say everyone around the world, but enough people around the world are celebrating. You know what today is, don't you? Yes, it is Protestant Reformation Day. Martin Luther King posted his 95 theses on the church door in Wittenberg, Germany, 477 years ago today. 1517 AD, Protestant Reformation Day. You thought I was going to say something else, right? That's right. The rest of us know this is National UNICEF Day, observed on behalf of the United Nations Children's Fund. That's right, National UNICEF Day. And for the very smallest portion of us, it is a day when people take to the streets, All Hallows' Eve. Yes, some people are celebrating. Oh, I shouldn't say celebrating. We have this discussion every year, don't we? For the last 9 years, we've had this discussion. 10 years, shall we say, about Halloween. I'd like to talk to you about your concerns about this day and whether you're going to let your children participate or not. And if you're concerned about it, I want to offer some suggestions. But let me read something to you, first of all. I want to read to you, and you see if this sounds at all familiar to you. The essential feature of this particular diagnosis is a sudden temporary alteration in the normally integrated functions of consciousness, identity, and behavior. And if the alteration occurs in consciousness, important personal events cannot be recalled. And if they occur in identity, either the individual's customary identity is temporarily forgotten and a new identity is assumed, or the customary feelings of one's own reality become lost and replaced by a feeling of unreality. And if the alteration occurs in behavior, then a certain wandering may occur. Now, that's a clinical diagnosis out of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. But, you know, it seems to me to suggest that in some way is a definition of Halloween. There's this alteration in consciousness. Our identity changes. We dress up as ghouls and ghosts and goblins and all these kinds of things. The diagnosis I just read was a dissociative disorder. Yes, like an amnesia, like a depersonalization. But isn't it interesting? This is kind of the one day that we take out, or some of us take out, and dress up, change our identities, and get involved in some things that are really very peculiar. Now, that's not for all of us. I mean, not all of us dress up as bloody ghouls and all these things. Although I just got out of the local supermarket. I was in there. I was looking over the greeting cards because I think if you want to have an interesting time, kind of a sociological, party of sorts, go to the card section and read the cards during the various seasons, Christmas cards, the Thanksgiving cards, Easter cards, various holiday cards. One of the most boring, quite frankly, and I'm not sure why, but it's Halloween. If you go to the card shops and look at the Halloween cards, I guess because it's one moment. You don't celebrate Halloween for days on end like we do Christmas and other holidays. But it's very kind of just drab, you know. But there was a woman checking out of the supermarket, and she was sitting there with this huge wig, this cape, and two exposed breasts. Now, they weren't her real breasts, but they were exposed breasts. And she was walking in the line, and everybody was kind of thinking it was rather cute and funny. And it's the day that we kind of take off. We just kind of leave aside, put aside rational thought and behavior, and we just kind of go weird. We just become weird. It's very interesting. At Knott's Berry Farm has their, what do they have, the haunted house? Disneyland has the Haunted Mansion. It's just one step up against the Haunted House. It's the Haunted Mansion. But dismembered bodies, I mean, I want you to think about it. Halloween is the one day when what is not very funny in reality becomes entertainment. I mean, the O.J. Simpson mask. the O.J. Simpson trial has a real Halloween feel to it, doesn't it? Halloween celebrates the ghost, the goblin, the murderer, the monster, never the victim. There's no remorse for the forthcoming for the murdered victim. No, 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 no. It's the Frankenstein. You know, it's the Dracula. Since it's been 63 years since Frankenstein and Dracula were released. There have been countless knockoffs, remakes, spoofs, and parodies. And presently, there are 32 movies with Dracula in the title available right now in the video stores, 29 with Frankenstein, and scores more featuring other characters and monsters. Isn't it interesting? It's a day we just kind of slip away. For the rest of us, it's Martin Luther Protestant Reformation Day and UNICEF Day. What is it for you? What is it for you? Let me just recommend a couple things if you are going out on the streets today and your children are. Remember this, you need to know where they're going, who they're going with, and makeup is far safer than a mask because masks can obscure vision. Make sure you have flashlights to increase visibility. Don't ever let your children walk into a house to go in to get whatever tricks. And inspect all treats, throw away the fruit, and any candy that's loosely or has torn wrappings. Use your judgments. Okay. And also, just the last thing in the news, if you might find this interesting, there is a paranormal research department at the Learning Light Foundation in Anaheim. It's a private group that studies the supernatural. Paranormal Research Department. They have a veteran ghost investigator there who receives as many as 20 calls a month. He says that about 25% of those calls require an on-site visit. And he has one particular story in the LA Times in the Orange County section. And he says, it was about 6 years ago, and his group triumphed over a rather pesky spirit in the shop of a downtown Orange. The muscular ghost apparently dragged a 300-pound saw 10 yards and wedged it between the shop wall and the ceiling. The group, now listen to this, the group created a collective thought form. They created a collective thought form that flooded the store with white light and forced the spirit from the building. It was living off, shows you can certainly have confidence in this gentleman, it was living off the energy in the building, and we cleansed the area. It kind of reminds me a little bit of my father, who is ailing at this time, as you probably have heard, and who's ailing that he once bought out of a Field and Stream magazine a fish killer. It kind of reminds me of that. You hook it up to somehow the shaft of the motor, the outboard motor, and you drag it around and it makes the sound of a dying fly or a shrimp or whatever that is, and maybe dying cheese, and the fish come to this thing, and then you can just pull them on board. And when I asked my dad when I was a young child if he could just let me listen to it, he said, well, it's not audible to the human ear. Yeah, I think this company here, where they fled the area with some kind of stream of conscious white light or something, sounds a little bit like they got it out of a Field and Stream magazine. Now, my father's not ill because of that idea, that kind of ignorance, but ignorance does kill. Okay, let's get on the lines and talk to me. Let's see, toll-free 1-800-4-ISSUES. That's 1-800-447-7837. And let's talk to Carmel, shall we? Carmel from Carmel.
Hi, John.
Hello, Carmel.
Well, I'm calling back from Thursday. Mm-hmm. You remember you had asked me to call on Monday?
Yes, and write a letter to your mother.
Right.
Now, give us a background, because some of us weren't here. You called on Thursday regarding?
Well, I feel funny because you're talking about Halloween, and I'm calling about my mother. But
well, we each one of us have a ghost of a different kind, right?
Right, right.
Okay.
Let's see.
I tell you what, let's do. Let's take this commercial break. We'll all go out, hit the candies, the tricks and the treats, and we'll come back and we'll find out what's knocking, okay?
Okay.
All right, stay with me. My name is John Jolliffe. We're going to be here for the next 50 minutes. We've got a lot of program left, so stay with us, okay? This is The Issues of Life. Thank you.
John Jolliffe calls it free and unsolicited information, sometimes painful but constructive, pushing out the boundaries of what is familiar. He's talking about feedback, the things people say to you about you. In his popular cassette, The Value of Feedback, John encourages us to stretch ourselves by getting feedback from others. How to handle painful feedback, and how to identify helpful feedback and incorporate it into our lives. The Value of Feedback, just $7.95 from The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or if you prefer to use your Visa or MasterCard, call 1-800-4-ISSUES. Be sure to mention that title, The Value of Feedback. The address again, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or call 1-800-447-7837.
John Jolliffe, and we've got a couple lines open. If you'd like to call, toll free, 1-800-4-ISSUES. That's 1-800-447-7837. And we're speaking to Carmel. Carmel, give us a kind of a recap of what your call was about Thursday. You're calling back with your letter.
Right. I called Thursday because I was feeling a lot of hatred and anger toward my mother that I haven't allowed myself to feel.
Yes.
I've had a very difficult time separating from my mother and basically growing up and becoming an adult. And my problems with my mother seem to affect most of my relationships.
Yes, uh-huh.
And
not only was it difficult for her to separate from you, but it was difficult for you to separate from her.
Right.
Right, okay.
And it's taken me a long time. My mother is a narcissist.
Mm-hmm.
So she has, it's very difficult for me to be myself. But
and why do you call her a narcissist?
Pardon me?
And why do you call her a narcissist?
Because she sees everyone, she doesn't see me as a separate individual. She sees me more as an extension of herself.
Mm-hmm.
And it really threatens her quite a bit when I express my own opinion. Or she can't acknowledge my own thoughts and opinions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. And she also has a certain sense of entitlement, a sense of her own self-importance.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. And narcissists typically exploit other people. They take advantage of others to indulge their own desires, you see, and disregard the integrity and rights of other people. So it may be, well, that you are onto something, but the point of writing the letter was to help you, wasn't it?
Right.
And before you read the letter, do you have it in front of you?
Right, I do.
What did you discover after having written the letter?
Well, it just kind of clarified what I kind of knew in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I'll feel things and not really know them.
Uh-huh.
But when I write them out, they become clear to me.
That's a wonderful statement. Sometimes you'll feel things but not really understand them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not until we talk it out, write it out, and then read it aloud that we begin to be able to identify. Okay, very good, very good. Go ahead and read the letter to me.
Dear Mother, it has taken me a very long time to come to this place, and only God knows what the future holds for me, but it can't hold you. For you are my past and not my future. My future is with God and not with you or about you. I have found the pain, dear Mother, and the pain is with you and actually you. Oh God, to never ever have to go back to you. I still fear that, a little, but I would rather be poor and destitute than go back to you. If I have money, I won't need you at all, so I'll work on that. There is still some fear there. Mother, wake up. You are wrong. You are wrong. Wake up. You're wrong. I am here. Yes, to my revelation, I am here. I exist. I can't make myself disappear, so there's just a you. I tried, but God won't let me. I'm still here. and I will always exist. I am an eternal soul. I'm here. Notice me, Mother. I'm here. I'm here. And the greatest pain of my life, Mother, and I have the hardest time accepting, and I still don't want to believe it, is that you can't and you never will notice me. So I have to say goodbye. And the first time I thought of this, there was a big black hole, blackness and nothing. But God showed me in that blackness and frightening expanse, the word to come, the Bible and what you tell us to do, seek the kingdom of God. So I have that. But now it feels good. It feels free to not have you in my life. I feel like dancing. Yay, I don't have to go back to my mother. I have me. You are the pain, dear mother. We, your children, can't be you. We will die. We can't. We can't. I'm sorry. I have to say goodbye and wander and explore this way God is calling me. I feel guilty and ashamed, but I have to say goodbye. It's okay if I have problems and I'm not perfect. So what? I can be happy inside and love my husband and my two precious children. I can be happy inside because even if the world is crumbling, I'm me, and it feels okay and good.
Now, was it, did you conclude that letter with sincerely yours or love,
I
your daughter?
I just love.
Okay. Does it feel like an open letter? Or
well,
does it feel like a finished letter?
I feel finished to me.
Okay.
I would never send this to her.
Okay. Do you need to send it?
No.
Can you operate from it? Can you use that as a guide?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And how? What are you going to explain to your mother in terms of the change that she begins to observe?
Well, you know, I tried to write a letter saying, actually thinking of what I would say to her, but even that, I wouldn't even show that to her because she can't handle it.
What does that mean, she can't handle it?
She would just sit there with pursed lips, not say anything, and just start weeping or something.
Mm-hmm. I'd like you to write or rewrite a couple of sections in this.
Uh-huh.
One is this idea of not going back to her.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't say there's any hope. And I think that in some cases we need to be able to share with them, if a relationship has any chance, then we have to terminate the relationship that we have now and create a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the ashes of the old, we create something new. And I'd like you to explain that. What would have to happen in order for you to be encouraged at all to make contact with her?
Well, I'd like her to listen to me a little bit.
Well, you don't have to tell me, but you need to write that out in the letter. And I'd like you, I think it would be helpful for you to send that letter, because I think you're still going to continue on with the relationship with your mother, as you always have. I don't think you're going to cut her off and never talk to her again. That may be what you would fantasize and what you'd like to do.
Uh-huh.
But I don't think, you know, most people can't do that without an explanation to their parents. Most people just don't abandon their parents.
Uh-huh.
Well, they confront their parents. And I'd like to see you confront your parents, now whether it's in a letter or it's in person, but let there be some kind of bridge by which she can cross if she decides to make the changes.
I see.
Do you see what I mean?
So tell her what I would like from her.
I think you need to tell her what you'd like and what you can't no longer tolerate. I think there has to be some letter. Maybe there has to be a meeting, but there has to be something you leave with her so she can review and review.
Okay.
Mother, refer to page 2. Mother, the third paragraph. I think I said this to you in the third paragraph. The problem we're having, Mother, right now is the fourth paragraph.
Uh-huh.
Do you see what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And let her read it again and again. You keep copies because you may have to send her copies. But I don't suggest that you just leave your mother. I think you need to confront Mother. I think you need to discuss this with Mother. I think you've got to leave something with Mother. And then change the relationship on your end. And refer to certain paragraphs when she wonders what happened. Okay?
Okay.
Very good, my friend.
All right, can I express my opinion about Halloween?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I just as soon skip Halloween.
Okay.
But my children, like, they're young, and it's kind of cute. You know, they get dressed up, and they have a little party at school.
Uh-huh.
So I like that part of it.
Sure.
But, like, my son is in the public school, and they sing songs about witches and stuff like that.
I would just get a copy of the lyrics, and that way you can talk to your children about the lyrics. They may be nothing, or they may be something. But I don't think children celebrate Halloween. What they do is they celebrate getting together another day of free candy and going around and scaring each other and having fun. They celebrate the fun of it. I don't think they celebrate Halloween. Do you see what I mean? I don't think they celebrate Halloween any more than a public school celebrate Easter, even though they take the vacation. Okay, my friend.
Right.
I enjoyed talking to you.
Uh-huh.
Call me again.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, it's true. I don't think anybody celebrates Halloween. Do you know anybody who celebrates Halloween? I'm not talking about throwing parties. I'm not talking about getting all dressed up. I'm talking about, what do you celebrate when you say you're celebrating Halloween? Let's talk to Sylvia. Hello, Sylvia.
Oh, hi, John.
Yes.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I've been listening to your program for a long time, and I really appreciate your sense of wellness towards the world and your connection with our Lord Savior.
Well, help me support the broadcast, Sylvia.
Oh,
thank you.
Your
question today?
Pardon me?
You had a comment about Sylvia? I mean, you had a comment about Carmel?
The last caller.
Yeah.
I was in here just minding my own business, and I heard her talking, and I got hit over the head.
Mm.
My mother moved to Los Angeles from Illinois after moving from Arizona to Illinois and staying there for 5 weeks with my twin brother, came to Los Angeles. I've had a stormy relationship with her all my life. But now, reaching the ripe old age of 50, I finally decided that I have some parameters, and being a child of God and born again, I have a new vocabulary. I have a new way of thinking. I have a new way of seeing the world.
And the interesting thing is that the reason that you've had such a chaotic relationship, or however you would describe it, whatever the superlative is, the reason that that relationship has gone on for so many years is what you have to explain. You have to explain why you've allowed this relationship to be so chaotic for so long.
Well, to begin with, if I can just briefly say, and I'm telling you, my heart is just really, that last caller really touched me.
That's interesting. You see, that's what they say, that life happens to us when we're making other plans. You were standing there innocently, and Carmel came and knocked on the door. We're going to take your call in just a minute, okay? You stay with us. We'll be back on the other side of the commercial with this issue and a lot of other issues of life in just a minute. Jolliffe, and we are speaking to Sylvia. Hello, Sylvia.
Hi, John.
Yes, you were particularly caught off guard with Carmel's letter to her mother. And I was saying to you just before the break, and this is something I want to say to everyone, is that if you have had a dysfunctional, destructive, painful relationship with somebody all these many years, we have to ask the question, why so many years? What does it say about, you know, our drama in terms of our struggles, our fears, our needs? What does it say about you?
Well, for one, the benevolence. I mean, I didn't realize that I was capable of being whole and perfect until I really came to know the Lord. And this walk with Christ has been more poignant in my life the last 20 years, but my mother is overbearing, and she's only 65, John, and she speaks with a cracky voice. She's totally controlled by her nervousness.
Okay.
And
what we have to do, and this is where typically every conversation begins to unwind, is that we wind up talking about those old crotchety voices rather than talk about our connection to those people. So let's stay focused on what it means about you that you've been putting up with and tolerating this for those many years.
Well, she moved to Arizona about 4.5 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, to get away from my brother and I. We're the only two children she has. My father is dead. She had the same kind of a relationship with her mother, and, you know, it just goes on and on. But what I want to know from you is, she came to stay with me, and she was here for about 20 days. And I was, I have two small children. I have an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Okay, go ahead and ask me the question.
What I want to know from you is, like with the letter that the last caller,
Carmel,
which she read on the air, which was just, I thought, very...
Okay, the question?
Articulate.
Yeah.
If when I was out there trying to do what was good, I picked her up at the airport and brought her in, and she couldn't see the good that was here in this home. She left. I left the day that she left. I guess my daughter, my big girl, came to pick her up and took her to her new apartment. I didn't say goodbye to her. She left a little note that said, thanks for everything, and here's $80 for the long-distance phone calls. And that's the way it is. And the way I feel right now, John, is I'm not interested in...
Okay, but remember what I just said.
Yes, I do.
The temptation and the thing that typically I see happening with people who are in struggles is they have countless stories. They don't have many questions, but they have a whole lot of history and a whole lot of stories. So, which is it for you? Do you have stories or do you have a question?
I just don't know what to do. I don't know whether the holidays are going to be coming up. I cannot, I don't know how to confront her without receiving her anger and all the baggage that goes along with it. I don't want any part of it anymore, and I'm not going to accept it. When she was here, she threw her coffee on me.
Here we go.
Well, it just happened, John.
Do you know what I'm saying?
It just happened.
I'm not trying to be rude, but I do want you to understand that one of the reasons that people continue for so long in these very unproductive relationships is that they think that they're accomplishing something by rehashing the history, by telling the stories. Listen, you can tolerate a tremendous amount of disrespect. You can tolerate things that are unfair. You've got a reputation and a history of that.
Okay.
What you have a hard time doing is bringing all of that history to a head and saying, therefore, I think this is what I need to do. What do you think? Come to a conclusion, come to a point, and say, I think I'm going to decide to do this regarding that, and then get a second opinion on that. You see what I mean?
Yes.
That's what you have to do. I'm not sure you're there yet, and that's not a criticism. I'm just not sure that you have brought it to a head yet, and you're willing to decide to do something different.
I feel that I don't want to have a relationship with her.
Okay, but that's what you don't want. That's what you don't want.
That's what I don't
But what
want.
Are you prepared to do is a question. See, what are you prepared to do? See, you know, when you ask the question, what are you prepared to do about all of that history and those stories, that's when the going gets tough.
Okay, so where do I begin? Do I write her a letter?
Write yourself
like
a letter.
Carmel did?
Carmel wrote herself a letter about her mother.
I have written in my journal all my life about this woman.
Okay, then read them again and come to a point where you decide on what you're going to do.
I've already decided. I don't want to have a relationship with her.
Okay,
that's my decision.
What does that mean? Does that mean you never call her again, never see her again, never write her again? See, if you make it too extreme, you won't support it.
Yes.
I'm going to burn every picture of my mother's. I'm going to change my maiden name. I'm going to never call her again. And anything that she's ever given me, I'm throwing away. If anger is allowed to direct your planning, you won't support it when you wake up tomorrow.
It's not even anger. It's just...
Well, whatever.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Yes.
Okay. Call me back when you've decided. Go back and read the diary again. Hear some more of the stories. Come back to me with a decision about what you're going to do that you can support and get a second opinion on it. like you said, you were in the kitchen, you weren't prepared for this. Get prepared, call me back, and let's see where you go from here.
Okay, John.
And if you have to write a letter to your mother to come to that point of where you come to a, this is what I'm going to do, then do that, and then call me back.
All right.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you for your sweetness.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Did she say thank you for your sweetness? Okay. Tomorrow night, you remember, every Tuesday through December 13th, every Tuesday at the Holiday Inn in Long Beach, we're going to be having what I call the second opinion. The second opinion is from 7 o'clock until 9 o'clock at the Holiday Inn at the airport there in Marriott, right there at the 405 and Lakewood Boulevard. Beginning at 7 o'clock, music is going to be about 15 minutes this coming Tuesday, as tomorrow. 7 to 7:15 music as you're getting coffee and tea and kind of hello and greeting some of the people. My lecture will begin at 7:15 to about 7:45. We'll have about a half-hour lecture on the subject of needs and wants, some essential distinctions. We'll talk about wants and we'll talk about needs, and I'll share some things with you that I think you'll find fascinating about counter-identity and some other kinds of profiles. And then we'll have a good hour, hour and 15 minutes, of questions and insights from the audience. So you'll be able to ask your questions on this subject or any other subject. So come to the Holiday Inn tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. $15, you can get your tickets at the door, and there'll be plenty of people there. Let's talk to, I believe it is Gary. Gary had a question or comment, don't you, Gary?
Yes, hello. I had a comment about the Halloween holiday that we're in right now.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think there's a... Really, the Halloweens when I was growing up are different from the Halloweens that we're having now.
Mm-hmm. How so?
Well, we're living in a time of great change, and the apocentricity of our nodulisticism is unconvelable.
Oh, that's
and
a great phrase. Would you say it again?
No one can bear the onlust and andocleptogy of today's volus, and I understand that malprogrammatizing this condolipsity is true of most deliestation. You know, and that's not to say that appertension can create an easily retendable botulism, but, you know, the main Graelic to such trenches lies in the absolute diagenic of Montastular Noctiva. I mean,
is this back masking?
If two fearless handagers are going to develop an interlustable brisage, then, you know, pardon estimate of the dologic is just going to become undrendable. So, I mean, I think a new lindency should select the ulceroveliflus nitrogency. If we're going to resolicify the torquenil with the marincope, then we must ulcerate our own wectrin.
Let me ask you a question, Gary.
Yeah.
May I ask you a question?
Yeah. I just want to know your opinion on that.
Well, I think I'd like to answer the first one second, okay? And the second question that you asked had to do with what is All Hallows' Eve anyway? Well, it happened to be believed that the Celtics believed that on October 31st that all people who died the previous year, wasn't that your question? They assembled to choose a body of the person or the animal that would inhabit them for the next 12 months. And so what they did to frighten away these roving souls, Celtic family members dressed themselves in demons, hobgoblins, and witches. That's how it all happened.
Yeah, but you see, what I'm saying is that many unsolicited entrators are going to be tramming on the permits of the Dairy Altar, and I feel that, you know,
Idiot
Contrordi and Drunman is involved.
Yeah, but if they take flashlights, they're not going to be run over.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Do you see what I mean? I mean, they're going to be wandering all around the streets, but if they have reflective vests or flashlights, I think they're going to be okay.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean...
The time we're living in.
That's it. Hey, appreciate your comments.
Thanks.
Okay, call again.
Sure.
Did I get it? Was I close? It's true, and to frighten away the roving souls and people of... prestidious vocabulary. They parade with these costumes inside and then outside the fireless house, you see, always making noise and destructive sounds because what happens is that when you make these sounds, you frighten away these disembodied souls who are trying to look for a body to inhabit for the next 12 months. That's right. And finally, they were these people, these Celtics, during the 5th century B.C., they would clamor around the streets to bonfires outside town, and a villager, deemed by appearance, mannerism, or vocabulary, seeming to be possessed, could be sacrificed in the fire as a lesson to other spirits contemplating human possession. So if you're not doing anything, you know, tonight, you know, lots of things going on. Victor?
Hello?
Do you have any comments about what's going on tonight?
Just that it's fun, I guess.
Some people are already having fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what are you about?
Okay, well, the reason I called was I have a 15-year-old that coaches soccer.
Uh-huh.
And he coaches 11- and 13-year-old girls. And before he started, he played soccer, but mm-hmm. he decided that this year he wanted to help coach.
Oh, yes.
So we told him it was a big responsibility and kind of like to try to talk him out of it.
Oh, yeah.
But we went ahead and let him do it anyway. And now he's finding out through his frustrations, because the girls don't listen to him, that he's trying to walk away from it.
Okay, so he's going to coach, and he's going to coach young girls.
Yeah.
It's his first experience in being a father to young girls. Okay, and he wants to walk. Maybe he just wants to vent his spleen. Maybe he's just communicating his dissatisfaction.
Well, I think, because I've already talked to him. Cause
and maybe he's also running out of options. You know, to coach, one of the wonderful things about taking on a job as a coach is you quickly realize that you're way over your head very quickly with a whole group of young people. And it may be a wonderful learning opportunity for him. Let's you and I talk off the air.
As you listen to John Jolliffe, have you noticed a difference between the radio counseling you hear all across the dial and the kind of radio therapy John brings you each day? It's more than a matter of style. It's a technique that guarantees you'll get more out of the hour you spend with us, and it's the hallmark of The Issues of Life. It's also the subject of a cassette by John entitled This Thing Called Therapy. You'll learn what the difference between a therapist and a counselor means to you, and how that knowledge can equip you to get the right kind of help with the issues of your life. Write to The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or if you prefer to use your credit card, call 1-800-4-ISSUES and have your Visa or MasterCard ready. Once again, that address is The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. And the phone number is 1-800-447-7837.
I was just talking to Victor off the air, and I was telling him, listen, people constantly want to give up. They want to quit. They want to get divorced. They want to commit suicide. They want to do all these things. But this is not the problem. This is the kind of thing we come up with, the only option that we oftentimes come up with when we don't know what else to do. We get to our wit's end, the end of the rope, and all those acronyms and not acronyms, but analogies and metaphors. We get to that place and we don't know what else to do. Do not focus, I told Victor. Do not focus on your son walking away. Do not focus on the typical and very easy thing to identify, and that is he signed up for the job. He's got to be responsible. He can't walk away. Don't come from there. Don't come from that place. Come from the place that says, son, I've been exactly where I think you are now. I have wanted to quit. I've wanted to walk away. I've wanted to give up. I've been there before, and I'm sure I'll be there again. But what I've learned is what you're probably experiencing is that you're out of options. You don't know how else to handle this situation to bring about the desired result. So let's think together in terms of what options could be available. Because when people have options, they don't want to walk away. They don't want to quit. They don't want to divorce. They don't want to commit suicide. You see what I'm saying? And most people want to divorce the struggle, the pain, the confusion they're in. Help them to end the confusion, and they'll stay committed. Sure, absolutely. Okay, I meant to ask Gary, if Gary's still listening, I wondered if his mother had any children. Do you think she did? Let's talk to Judy.
Hi.
Judy, welcome to you, The Issues of Life.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Wouldn't have you any other way.
Thank you for, I'm glad there were phone lines open so I could make my comment.
Okay.
I was calling about the whole Halloween issue,
mm-hmm.
Just to give you a little bit of background. My husband and I, the last couple years, have decided to just completely bypass and ignore Halloween. And, I mean, 2 years ago we were having Halloween parties and we were kind of, you know, with the general attitude of just making light of it. And, you know, this year and last year we just came to the decision that it's just not what God's calling us to do. And we have a three-year-old son. And I'm just shocked at the feedback I'm getting from other adults. I mean, they look at me cross-eyed like, you know, we're crazy for not participating in it. And we don't really have an answer to give people. I feel like I know very little about the history of Halloween, and I appreciated your comment
mm-hmm.
or your information about the history.
Yeah.
But we don't really have a clear-cut answer for people, not that that's really required. But kind of what comes to my mind is that, you know, we're not praising God and in celebrating Halloween. And just in that, it's not really worth doing if, you know, that's not the end result.
Well, do you make it an issue as to not celebrate it?
No.
Do you use that as an opportunity to communicate what you think about it?
This is really the first year I've really communicated it with anybody. People ask me, I do give them an answer. I do tell them why we've chose not to participate, but it's just difficult sometimes because even people that are friends of ours are celebrating Halloween or
well,
whatever.
Well, if you don't mind the questions and the sideways looks and some of that tension, if you don't mind that, then go ahead and give your explanation as to why you don't do certain things or you do other things.
Right.
If you prefer not to have that tension, then just don't give a response.
Right.
We just, we just don't celebrate it. You don't have to be dishonest, but you just don't, it's, you don't need to explain to people
mm-hmm.
Questions of taste. Now, let me ask you another question. Do you think it's Christian that you're taking a Christian approach to Halloween?
Yeah, I do. I think just in...
Does that therefore mean that anybody who's a...
participating, it is.
Okay, but therefore, if anybody's a Christian and they do take their children out trick-or-treating, is that the un-Christian thing?
It's not really for me to say or not to
say. But if you set up saying to not celebrate is Christian, well, then you wouldn't you say the other side is to celebrate Halloween in any of its many forms... I was saying earlier, I don't think people celebrate Halloween. I think they celebrate trick-or-treating.
Right.
But if to not celebrate is Christian, then to celebrate in its many forms is non-Christian. And maybe that's the problem that you're running into, that people are trying to defend what they're doing.
Yeah. I guess what I'm feeling is that I know there are many Christians that don't participate. They may have something going on at their church, and they really try hard not to associate it with Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of what I'm thinking, and I've shared this with my husband, is, you know, what's happening now will be part of history, just as what's happened, you know, years ago with the whole history of Halloween happened then. What we're doing now is it will make an impact. And I just feel like if there's enough Christians that don't participate in Halloween, that will be part of history. I mean,
okay.
Who knows, 200 years from now, it might read that, you know, in the 1990s, there were so many Christians that...
Possible, but not likely.
Right, but...
Possible, but not likely.
Right.
How well did the Christian impact MCA in terms of the last temptation of Jesus Christ? How much money did they lose for all the marching and all of that stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think this is going to go down in history if we fail to celebrate Halloween. I don't think it'll ever be reported in the media. If every Christian in the world never celebrated Halloween again, I don't think it would ever be reported in the media. Backline, rear page, probably.
Not that really matters. But
no, that's right. Let me ask you another question. And I'm not being at all antagonistic. I'm just interested in terms of the thinking, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do you celebrate Christmas?
Yes.
And do you talk about Santa Claus?
We're not going to put an emphasis on Santa Claus either.
Okay.
You know, our son is three.
How about reindeer?
No.
And sleighs?
No.
No fat men delivering packages?
No. I mean,
how about Christmas trees? Mistletoe?
Well, we've had a Christmas tree. We haven't.
You had one, but of course you
right.
had Santa Claus too.
We had one.
You had Santa Claus, and you had. Christmas trees. And are you going to have a Christmas tree this year?
I think we might, but we're going to be going out of town.
Well, yeah, well, that's one way to avoid the holidays.
No, go out of town. It's just that our whole purpose for celebrating Christmas is to celebrate Christ's birthday, and
that's
the focus we're going to have for it.
I understand.
But then Halloween, what other focus is there? I mean,
candy.
What I'm hearing from what you're saying is, I think what you're saying is. Mm-hmm. It's okay for Christians to participate in Halloween.
I think it's okay for Christians to be involved with Santa Claus. I think it's okay to do the Tooth Fairy. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay to put the stuffing in the pot and not in the turkey. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there are a lot of things that we can do as Christians. And one of the things that I'd like to see more Christians do is I'd like to see them in some way infiltrate the holidays. Rather than making stands that I think create more disharmony than harmony, I think that we can reclaim the holidays for Christ by infiltrating them as opposed to withdrawing from them. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I'm saying? And I think that you can have a great deal of fun dressing up as a biblical character. You could dress up as an angel. You could dress up as the wise men.
You know,
you could draw a positive attention to the fact that you believe differently, mm-hmm. and that you don't celebrate Halloween, but you celebrate people and activity and fun and all of that. Christians,
you know,
have fun.
I don't mean to interrupt you. I have to disagree with you on that.
Okay.
And the reason I do is because, you know, my knowledge of the Bible is not super wonderful. You know, I'm really learning.
No,
I'm trying
good.
To read and know more.
Yeah,
but you know, when the pagan culture, when the Jews were living in the pagan culture, God did not tell them to infiltrate into the pagan culture.
But they did. They, many of the holidays
they did
we
because they were sinful.
No. Many of the things that we did, the holidays we have today, are where we came in and we changed the holiday to make it something that we could celebrate. Because, you know, it's difficult enough to raise children in a world where we don't recognize certain holidays,
yeah.
and we set ourselves so apart. From other people and do other things.
Yeah.
I think that we'll find that Christmas trees are really pagan rituals, mm-hmm. and we'll find all kinds of other things where their body parts were hanging from the trees of these there are these terrible holidays, but mm-hmm. what Christians, rather than withdrawing from life and people, they have moved into life and into holidays and made their influence known in a positive way and not in some of these spectacles where we remove ourselves from these kinds of things. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, I do, but what you were saying earlier about the whole history book thing and how it's so unlikely for us to be acknowledged in a history book in years to come.
That's right.
Why would we be acknowledged in a holiday like Halloween where, I mean, there's, down
the because
street,
I think,
there's a dead
because
body
I think,
hanging from
yeah.
a tree, you know.
Well, I don't
that
think
that is not
yeah, I don't think we go there.
To acknowledge.
Let me give you an example. You know? Let me give you an example of trick-or-treat. The most widely accepted theory on the origins of trick-or-treating traces that practice to the 9th century European custom of souling. On All Souls' Day, Christians walked the village to village begging for square biscuits with currant called soul cakes. The beggars promised to offer up prayers for the dead relatives of the donors, and the number of prayers to be proportional to the donor's generosity. The quantity of prayers and the quality amassed was significant in a practical way. So, in a sense, we could introduce the soul cakes. Trick or treat, introduce the soul cake. There's a lot of ways that we can have a positive influence. Let's not withdraw, let's infiltrate for the cause of Christ.
The Issues of Life is a presentation of the Issues of Life Foundation, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801.